This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. This is your host, Tim Link, and I'm so glad you're joining us today. We have a super fun show today. We've got a master illustrator, author of multiple books, and the latest one is Lulu Didn't Want a Dog. I wonder who didn't want the dog. So we're going to talk, of course, to author Laurel Malk about that and maybe not give away everything in the book, but it's going to be a fun little chat. I want to talk to her a little bit about writing of the book and also a little bit about the illustrations, how those came about and how it's just so easy to do. So, So everybody hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
All right, joining me now is multi-author of numerous children's books and multiple writings all the way around, and of course, master illustrator, Laurel Malk. Laurel, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're super excited about it. I love the book, and I love the illustrations. Of course, we're talking about Lulu Didn't Want a Dog. So tell us a little bit about this particular book and how it came about, and a little bit about the illustrations and things within the book.
So Calvin is my dog at present. And Calvin was a persistent puppy in dog trainer terms. Stubborn. A bit of a fixer-upper in real estate terms. He was a whirling dervish. He ate everything in sight. He bit and bit and bit and nipped. And he jumped. And he was a lot like us. So I worked with positive reward trainers. And one of them said to me, after Calvin jumped on her a million times, "Laurel, you have the dog you have." And then she added, "You have the husband you have." So he's now 11. So the story has been percolating for at least 10 years now. And that's how it started.
I love it. And now it's more than just a book about your dog and your husband. Both
yes.
Works in progress. So I understand that one completely. But the premise of the book, tell us a little bit about that, because obviously it's not necessarily about your dog, but I know that your dog was your muse when putting the concept together.
The concept was, or the idea of the story is, you have the dog you have, and Lulu did not want a dog. She loved her life. She's very happy. And she was mortified to find out that she was getting a dog. And not only a dog, but a big, loud, rude, slobbery mess of a dog. And the book then shows their progress and how they came to grips with it and how they came to, well, how Lulu did. Gus was on board from the get-go.
I love it. And of course, Lulu is a cat. That's the key thing behind it. And we know kitty cats rule the roost to begin with. And the fact that all of a sudden this dog appears in her perfect life where she has the perfect windowsill and the perfect nap time and everything. And then we get this puppy that comes along, or a dog comes along, and he's a hot mess.
Yes, exactly. And in fact, while I had Calvin, when Calvin was 6 months, we took care of my son's cat for a month while he was traveling elsewhere. I'm allergic to cats, but it was fine. Moose is this tiny, very, very civilized little kitty. And they never met for 6 months. I mean, for 4 weeks, I would go and they'd have their separate ways. And Moose was very insistent on his pet time and his cuddle time, but he would not meet or engage with Calvin.
And I love it. You know, and cats can sort of get away with that. You know, they can find a place to hide and come out when they want to. And as long as they don't mess with the dog's stuff or eating habits, then they can just live their own little life. But these two obviously were at odds a little bit. Lulu didn't understand why in the world would we want a dog in the house. And then, of course, at the end, I'm assuming everybody lives happily ever after.
Everybody lives happily ever after. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how we love a good children's book and a good book in general. That's what we want to do.
Well, I agree. I'm glad people do illustrate sad books about dogs, but not for me.
Yeah, I skipped those chapters.
Yes, I do too.
Yes, we've had the pleasure of interviewing so many different authors on animals that are either writing stories about animals or have an animal and a character, and some of them, you know, write, you know, the sad parts of it. And I'm like, okay, I love you, Mr. Author, Mrs. Author, but yeah, we're skipping that chapter for sure.
Exactly. Definitely
so,
for me.
So then tell us a little bit about the illustrations, because obviously the illustrations are from you.
The illustrations are from me. In fact, the book started with the illustrations. There were no words in the beginning. It was a wordless book. It starts with character sketches because I wanted to fall in love with the characters and get acquainted with them and get Lulu's catness and Gus's dogginess. And then I wanted it to be really fun and lively and bright colors and ink and splashes and just to reflect the craziness that Gus brought to the pictures.
Yeah, you did a great job with that. And I love how you stated that, because obviously you stole one of my questions. You know, do the illustrations come before the writing, or do the writing, you know, drive the illustrations? And in your case, the illustrations came first.
They did. In fact, I don't even think there were any words, but I do have a wonderful agent and a wonderful editor for this book, and the people I worked with were fabulous. And then the words came.
I love it. I love it. And, you know, that's not an easy, and, you know, I sit here and think about it, you know, and a lot of people, I've interviewed a lot of great authors of children's books, and the same thing comes across every single time. It's not as easy as it appears. You know, for the novice, you're thinking, okay, you either illustrate it, or if you draw like me, you don't want any part of that. You know, you have a bunch of stick figures there. But you get some nice illustrations, you write some nice words, bada beam, bada boom, 2 weeks later, you got a book. And that's not the case, is it?
No, but what I did want to add is it's a collaboration for me. So I got a lot of feedback from my agent and from the editors and from the art director. So that was really great. But no, this one literally took 10 years of percolating. So, but the actual project, it probably took a year and a half, 2 years to go from dummy to dummy to dummy to lay. Dummies are rough sketches of the 32 or 40 page book, and it turned into a 40 page book. Then more dummies, then rearranging, then the words, then swapping everything out, then lots of color samples and lots of experiments. And it was great. It was really fun.
I love that. And yeah, 10 years to percolate. She had to percolate a good story and put together the illustrations. And then you still throw in another year and a half of putting it all together and getting it out there so everybody can enjoy it.
Well, I was doing other books in the interim. So it wasn't 10 years of just sitting percolating. But yes, it took 10 years to actually gel into a story that I could make work.
Yeah. And I look at it, it's not that easy, because a lot of times, no matter what you're writing, whether it's fiction, nonfiction, or children's books, youth book, whatever it may be, you know, you come with an idea in the story and you start to write the story, but it may not be the right timing. Or like you said, you're writing, you're doing multiple projects, or you're writing, you know, columns and articles on the side to pay the bills while this is brewing. Sometimes it gets put on the shelf, and sometimes an editor comes along and says, well, that's not quite what we look for, but do you have something like this? And you're like, oh, hold on. Let me pull it off the shelf and blow some dust off of it. And voila, there you go.
True. But this one, it took a while to come together. But once it came together, it was a really smooth process. I should not say that smooth, because I do have stacks and stacks of outtakes and redos. So yeah, especially working with watercolor, it's a very spontaneous, wonderful medium. Then you have to accept that it's a process and embrace flowiness, but it doesn't always work. So sometimes you just have to scrap it and start again.
And you brought up an excellent point, because the book is full of watercolors, you know, and it's wonderful pastels, and you see a lot of the water, you can see the water flowing, and you could definitely tell that each individual one of the pages could be its own standalone watercolor, not part of a book, just on the wall somewhere.
So nice of you.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant because, you know, I love illustrations because I'm not that talented to do that. And there's so many different ways to go about doing it, whether it's computer generated graphic, whether it's sketch, whether it's ink or whatever it may be. I don't often see watercolors as the main illustration inside of a book, especially a children's book.
I think it's more rare now. I think that Photoshop is becoming more popular, but I still love getting my hands in it and messing around with the paper and the pen and ink and the watercolor. It just makes me happy.
Yeah. Well, it makes me happy looking at it. So you did great jobs there for sure. And I can sort of see the modes behind it because you want the colors of the characters. You the dog is a hound, a white, black, brown hound. And cat fans, calico sort of looking. Yeah, we'll say.
We'll take that.
But everything else surrounding that is beautiful pastels and beautiful colorings. And it really not only pops off the page, but also gives it a real nice soft feeling behind the activities that the animals are going through in their daily routines, and all their tragedies become best friends at the very end.
Yes.
I love that part of it. So we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back and continue our conversation with author and illustrator Laurel Malk and pick her brain a little bit more about writing of the book, as well as just putting it all together. So everybody hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Or wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to communicate with animals is a 4-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises as a method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit petliferadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Continue our conversation with author and master illustrator Laurel Malk and her latest book, Lulu Didn't Want a Dog. Put an extra stress on that for you. So putting together the book, and you got it, it's printed, it's on the shelf, so it's ready to go. When people pick up a copy of the book and read through it, whether they're reading it for themselves as an adult or their children, grandchildren, whatever it may be, or students, what do you hope to accomplish at the end of the day as an author and illustrator? Is there a main goal that you have? Or if someone pinged you and said, hey, I got this out of the book, what would make you happy?
It would make me happy if kids enjoy it. My main goal is for kids to enjoy reading. And if a kid has fun and enjoys it and is engaged, honestly, that's my goal. I loved reading as a kid. And if I can make one reader or, you know, a bunch of readers happy, kids, adults, that's why I'm in the game.
That's it. I love it. Well, they'll definitely be happy picking up the book and going through it multiple times. You know, we also want this to be their favorite. They want this one. We want mom and dad and grandma and grandpa go crazy reading over this book. So then I was reading through your bio, very fascinating because, you know, we talk about, you know, authors and writers and illustrators coming from different backgrounds, different fashions. You know, some study immensely in their early ages. Some people have gifts going into this. But when it comes to the illustration parts of it, you pretty much just, whoever liked your stuff, they can have a copy or they can buy it for a penny or a few dollars here or there. Then all of a sudden you decided, hey, I can do this a little bit better and maybe make a 2 pennies off of it or something.
I started drawing, painting when I was probably 3 or 4. And my happiest school days, sorry, teachers, was when my mother let me play hooky and I would stay home and draw all day. So, and then I went to college. I taught middle schoolers for a while and I realized I really wanted to get to drawing. And then I went to Rodin School of Design, studied illustration, and then really devoted myself to children's books and drawing and all that good stuff.
And now you parlayed that into multiple books. You parlayed that into showings and exhibits. I see the Society of Illustrators. I mean, that's just a fantastic thing that to realize, okay, I've got a gift and a passion at a, really an early, very early age, and you continue to develop that. Yes, we have to pay bills and do other jobs and find ourselves. But at the end of the day, you circle back around to what your true purpose is, I would say.
Yeah. It's true. And even the stuff when I graduated RISD and I had to pay the bills, all that was kind of a blast. I worked for some athletic companies and I designed t-shirts and bike, back in the day when there weren't bike helmets, more those racing bike hats and shoes, running shoes. I mean, and I live near Boston, so I designed street windows on Newbury Street and it was fun. It's all been fun. It's just, it's really, you're right. It's really great to be able to have a passion and just run with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the key thing behind it. You know, as humans, I like to say, you know, we work our whole, spend our whole lives trying to figure out what our purpose is, what our passions are. And even if we identify what they are, taking that sort of leap of faith, no matter what you're, how old you are, taking that leap of faith and following through with it is a, it's a big accomplishment. So big kudos for you.
Thank you. I have to say, as an artist, it's kind of a big leap of faith that you're going to make a living out of it.
It is. You know, I always say you find your purpose, you find your passion, and the money will come. That's what I live by. Hopefully my debtors will agree with that. When I, but it's worked for me so far, so I'm going to stick with that philosophy. Where can people pick up a copy of the book, Lulu Didn't Want a Dog, and all of your other writings? Where can they find out about you, where you're going to be, how they can see your art, and your exhibits, and your book signings, all that wonderful stuff?
I have a website, so they can see a bunch of that stuff. It's laurelmilk.com, and I just started an Instagram account, and that's laurelmilk, so easy to find.
There you go. Well, we'll definitely get those posted. Everybody pick up a copy of the book. It's Lulu Didn't Want a Dog, Laurel Malk, and pick up all the other wonderful writings. Keep track of what Laurel's doing in all of her exhibits. And Laurel, congratulations on a job fantastically done. And I look forward to chatting with you again when the next one comes out. No pressure.
Well, thank you for having me on the show. I really, really appreciate it. It's been really great fun.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Well, we're coming to the end of the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. I want to thank the producers and sponsors for making this show possible. If you have any questions, comments, ideas, or people you want to hear from the most, drop us a line at PetLifeRadio.com, and we'll be glad to answer your questions, entertain your comments, and bring on all those fabulous people you want to see and hear from. That's at PetLifeRadio.com. So until next time, write a great story about the animals in your life, and who knows, you may be the next guest on Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have a great day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.